you've instantly done what the public do, which is the best player start. And actually, that isn't what happens in the game.
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Traxton, and you are listening to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that tells you exactly how the talent industry works. In this episode, we welcome back Heather Fisher for a Rugby World Cup special. Heather won the 2014 Rugby World Cup with England and also represented Team GB in the Olympic Games. I started by asking her how a young woman should go about becoming a rugby player.
You need to find your local rugby club. And the best way to do that is to find one that's in the Premiership, the PWR, right? So that's the best, because then you've got a pathway into England, which is where it goes. If you weren't near a club that is part of the PWR, that's absolutely fine, but you'll play the guys, play the boys until, I think it's 12, roughly, maybe. And then after that, you might be a bit like, where next? And then you'll need to find your club that is PWR. Saracens, Loughborough Lightning, Leicester Tigers, Harlequins. And then once you're in that pathway of club, then you kind of get scouted for regional and then under-18s England. And then if you've got more firepower in you, then you're in that international, I suppose, that space that people look after you, and you start to then get a system around you, people around you support your skill sets, mindset, physio, etc., added on until you're where you could be. But club systems in the PWR are pretty in a pretty good place in terms of you get now most things, like your S&C, you get your physio, you've got doctors at hand, you've got everything there you need at a good PWR club. So the answer is go and find a great PWR club.
What about if you're a beginner? So let's say you're a girl who's really sporty, you're into you're into sports at school, you kind of smash everything, but rugby's probably not available to you at school as a girl, and you really love the look of it. You've just seen the World Cup that's on, you're like, I want to do that. Presumably you can't just go from being sporty and not really knowing the rules to straight into the Premiership development system. What do you do in between?
Yeah, but you just need to go and find a club to just go and learn the game at. But when you find a club, you've got clubs that are Premiership clubs, and then you've got non-Premiership clubs. It doesn't matter where you end up to go and start, but you need to start because you enjoy it and you want to get to learn the game. But if you want the best coaching and the best systems around you, you're best finding a PWR club. I think it's still a part of our game that isn't flourishing yet. Like England, we're firing on all cylinders, but it's not yet feeding down. It's not an easy pathway. I had to travel 2 hours to get to my nearest club when I was younger. And even now, I live in the Midlands, and if I wanted to go and join a club, my nearest one would be Leicester Tigers, which is about an hour and 15 minutes away. Or Loughborough Lightning, about an hour and 15 minutes away. So it's not easy, but when you've got Premiership, you've also got the second team. And so you haven't got to go straight into Premiership. The difference is you've got the system, the support systems around you to be able to have the opportunity. If you want to make England, you've got the opportunity to go and be an England player if you wanted to be that.
And how else can you prepare yourself? Because I think a lot of us make the mistake that we watch it and we go, right, if you want to play rugby, you just need to be good at rugby. But it's not like that, is it? You're psychologically preparing yourself, you're doing other fitness. What other stuff can you be doing so that when you're in the right space, you can hit the ground running?
That's a great question, because I believe that any young... I've got a master's in S&C, right? And I believe...
Strength and conditioning.
Thank you. I believe that actually as a young person, it's really good to do all sports and just get used to moving, get used to your body and how it feels, and get to know and be the master of yourself in terms of what you're good at and where you need to progress. And you can, when you're a young athlete, a young girl or a young guy, you can almost channel to what you need to work at, but it takes time to evolve. You need training history, you know, within you, so you need training years. So almost you can do any sport, any skill, but you need to be in the gym, you need to be lifting, you need to be moving, you need to be developing yourself in terms of speed. Speed is something that can be built over time, and everyone has a almost like a cap of what speed you've got in them.
Mine's very low.
I've seen it. So speed's the only one for me that if you've got a little bit of speed, it needs training. Every component of S&C, of strength and conditioning, is a skill, and you need to hone in on those skills. But you get a lot of players these days and young people just transitioning between football and hockey or bobsleigh and rugby. You can transition between sports, and there'll come a time where you'll have to choose. But my advice to any young person is don't choose until you have to choose, because I wouldn't have ever been an England sevens player, Great Britain sevens player, if I probably didn't do bobsleigh. Because bobsleigh taught me the components of speed and how to really utilize and develop power and power and speed, and that was the game. I built my game on it. So stay open to everything. Equip yourself in terms of go and get strong. Where can you get strong? Where can you get help with your skill set, your tackling, your passing, understanding the game? Where can you go and get support with your mindset? Because there's so much rejection in sport, and sometimes, like we're seeing now, the entertainment industry, it doesn't always make sense. The rejections you get don't always make sense. But we can't dwell on too much. You have to keep progressing. And I think what's amazing about sport is that you are in charge of who and what you want to be. You're in charge of that. So if you need to go, if you're not strong, go and get strong. If you're not speedy, go and get speedy. You know, if you need to get better at the knowledge of the game, go and get better with the knowledge of the game.
So what about, you touched on the mental side there and the resilience and rejection, but what about the other components of the mental side of the sport? Because there's a massive difference between how many hours you train a week to be captain of your sports team at school, even if you're really great and winning everything, and how many hours you're training if you're suddenly competing for your country. And even someone like you who loves sport, there must be a time where you think, I don't want to be doing sport right now. I've just got my eye on the prize. How can you check that mentally you're in that place where you're equipped to go and become an athlete and that's the right path for you?
Like, I had a dream of being Olympian from age 13, right? That was what I wanted to be. And at the time, rugby wasn't even in the Olympics. So how does that work out? But it was about having a passion and a purpose that was, I knew what I wanted to be. And I think if you know what you want to be, that's almost like a bit of an advantage, like tick. And you have to keep pushing. You don't know resilience until you have to become resilient. You don't know setbacks until you have setbacks. And you find the way to win. You find the opportunities where you can thrive, and you find the way to win internally and externally. But they're not easy, because you don't know when they're going to prop up. Like, you might have a coach coach you and your face just doesn't fit. I think one of the biggest advice, or what I learned in my career, was most seasons, or maybe every other season, you get a new head coach, and you spend your life as a young person trained to be a certain way. Like, I know my X factor. I know what I'm good at. I know I was a defensive player. I know I love to fold people in half. I knew that I led defences up. I knew that I led by being on the pitch. I didn't have to be a captain to lead. And you don't have to be a captain to lead. But you have to know what you're good at, and you have to know your role and your responsibility. But when you get a new head coach in every year or every other year, you feel the need to go, oh, they want a player who's going to be more playmaking, so I need to be more of a playmaker. Or this coach recognises hard work, so I need to be the last one on the pitch. And actually, what you learn as you get older and wiser is you don't have to be that at all. You can stick to what you are, and you can really home in on the type of player that you want to be, and you stick to what you know, and you'll just become world class at what you do. And then you have this ability just to branch out. Once you've honed your craft, you can always home out to what a coach wants, but you're always so true to the player that you are. You don't try and mould yourself to what a head coach always needs or wants, because there are so many other players around you and you're in a team that they all have their individual roles and responsibilities, and it's that that makes the team go and win.
Let's say somebody wants to follow your path. Let's use that as an example. If I'm right in thinking, after the age when you would have been doing GCSEs and you're the baby in the year, so you're still kind of 15, you got called up to an official academy program for your sixth form. And in those days, not that long ago, but in those days, there weren't that many girls performing at a high level. So a lot of people who became your ultimate teammates were there too. How does that work? How do you even cope with going away from home, a completely new environment, sort of your career's being decided and you haven't even turned 16 yet?
I'm always being an England rugby player, so I just relished the environment and built my gym at home, trained in between all my work, trained in between all my studies. Like, I've done my degree and my master's, trained throughout all of it. It's really hard trying to balance everything. I think it's one of the most difficult challenges for a young person, is to balance everything. And something's got to give. So for me, it was like there was no social life. My social became rugby, my friends became rugby. My spare time was training. My spare time was in the gym getting strong. My spare time was learning my trade. And if it wasn't that, then actually something you have to learn to do is recover. Every athlete at some point, every player will get injured. And so understanding your body and knowing what makes it fire, what makes it tick, and then understanding how to regenerate and recover is so important from a young age. So it's one of those things where when you want to be the very best that you can be, you throw yourself in the system. And it's tough because it's really competitive. It's dog eat dog. You're not a small fish in a pond, if that's whatever the saying is. Like, you're around big characters, you're around great players, and you either rise or you don't. But in a way, the fact that you've had purpose, the fact that you've been driven to have ambition, even if you don't end up in rugby, but you end up in another sport, or if you end up out of sport completely, you end up in amateur dramatics, or I don't know, a scientist. The fact that you've had that amount of ambition and purpose to drive you in one direction, you learn so much from. I think you learn so many lessons in sport that you just don't learn in real life.
How do you cope if your friends are your teammates and your friends are within the sport when one of you gets selected and the other one doesn't? Whether you're the one who does or doesn't get selected.
I've been there, done it. It's really, really, really tough, and it's drummed into us every day that it's team first. So you make sure you're on track, you make sure you're delivering everything, but it's always team first. It has to be a team first approach. Team values, team behaviors, team thoughts. Everything is based around the team experience. And then you slot into that team. And what I've learned from my experiences is about, it has to be about you in a way, because you make up the rest of the team. Like, if you don't do your job, the rest of the team can't do their job. And if they don't do their job, then you can't be the very best at what you do. So that mentality is drummed into us from the very start, that it's going to be, and this World Cup now, going on now in England, it's going to be a 32 woman effort. You don't get to finals with only 15 players fit. You don't get to finals with only two subs. You have to be able to utilise everybody, and there's a reason for everyone. It is always so difficult. I didn't get selected for a World Cup final, and I knew that I wasn't at my best. I knew that the game plan that England were using at the time didn't suit me as a player. I'm a very instinctive player, and I go by feeling, and I go from the vibe on the pitch, and I'm very instinctive, fully. So when the game changed and it went more systematic and paint by numbers, and you must stand here, and then you're going to stand here, Fish, and then you're going to go here, and my head's going, yeah, but I can see a space over there, and I think I should go over here. No, but Fish needs to be over here. I really struggled with that game plan, and I had to come to terms with it very quickly overnight when selection came through the door in our hotel room that I wasn't going to play a part in that World Cup. And it's really tough, because the one question people ask you is, I've been to 5 World Cups and never played in the World Cup final. It wasn't out of ability. It was just out at that moment in time, did I suit the rest of the players alongside me? And sometimes I did, and sometimes I didn't. And when you're a team first player, you have to understand your place in the system, not just your place of where you think you should be, but where the team needs to be, and what is going to get the team to the, what is going to get the team to a final, and how is that going to happen? And understanding that, it takes a lot of emotional maturity, because you have to be able to pull yourself back out of the system and stop thinking about yourself and think about the team first, which is a really tough place to be. But at the end of the day, I'm a proud Olympian and proud England player, and I know what my job was, but your face won't fit every coach or every squad that you're in, and that is part of the game that we play.
Hang on, go back on that. Explain to me how you get selected.
When you're under a new head coach and you've got a new squad for a new season, you'll always talk about, it's down to the players, how do you want selection to happen? Sometimes you've had it where you're all in a meeting room and you have all the names on a flip chart, and the coach will go, here's a squad about to face Australia, pulls the flip chart back, and you're in the same room and you're either selected or you're not, and you have to deal with your emotions there and then as a player.
Scanning the piece of paper for your
name. Yeah, that's really tough. That's tough, but you're all in it together. You all face the white line together. You're a white wall together, and part of that is facing selection together and who's going to go and do the job, because for you to be able to be at your best, I need to also be at my best in training for you to be at your best. So it's that team first mentality. I've been in squads where you have an email, so the email might come out on a Friday night at 5 o'clock, but when the internet's down, you're like, where is it? And everyone will get the same email, same time. For Olympic selection, that was email. And I remember just taking myself off to the park on my own, because there's so much expectation. People just expect you to be selected. People never think you won't be selected. Like, my mum's probably already booked her train ticket to Rio. You can't even get from England to Rio on a train. Already booked her plane ticket to Rio. Do you know what I mean? So I would take myself away and just receive this email, and then, you know, when you click on it, it's going to say you're in or you're out. And we've been in it where we'll have a presentation, a team meeting, and then I'll go, okay, with the face to side, like the side to face is, and it'll just be presented to you. Or tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, someone's going to put a piece of paper through the door and it'll have selection on it, and you have to deal with it in your room with a teammate, and then you have to be able to come out of the room and face the squad. And that's really, really challenging. That's really challenging.
You must have an idea of who's going to get selected.
Or do you have an idea, but when a coach has been rogue and taken the gamble, that's really tough.
Is it harder not being selected if you think you're marginal and we're really hoping you might get in? Or if you think you're in and then suddenly there's a shocker?
For me, when it comes down to selection, there should be no surprises. It's about honesty with the coach, and I really respect a coach who's just honest. The hardest selections are when you feel like you've gone through training, you're training well, your stats are good, your training stats are good, your GPS has got all the data, live data that shows everything, so you know where you sit within the squad, and then you've just not been selected. And you're like, how, why? And your coach has gone, well, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. And then you're like, but you didn't tell me. If you told me to brush up on that, I would have brushed up on it. So when you don't have that honesty and that transparency, it makes it really difficult for a player. I've been there a few times where I've not been selected. And sometimes I understand why. 2014, I wasn't at my best. I got stuck between being an X Factor player and a very instinctive player versus a coach coming in and wanted to make the squad very paint by numbers. And I was never a paint by numbers type of player. So although I found it really hard, I understood it. Olympics was really tough because it was a dog-eat-dog environment, and if you made a mistake on the pitch, you were off. You were just sent off the pitch. You can't play a game of tennis or ping pong without having points scored against you. You're going to make mistakes, and you have to be able to trust your players enough to make mistakes and give them the opportunity to go again. Whereas some coaches come in and they feel the need to go, you're off. And that, when you're an X Factor instinctive type player, I'm going to make decisions very instinctively. 99.9 are going to come off, some won't. And that's, when you select me, that's what you know you're going to get. So it's frustrating when coaches have a bee in their bonnet or have a certain thing in their head, but you don't fit that mold. And I don't think it ever leaves you, because you feel like as a player, you have to keep evolving, you have to keep growing, and you have to keep adding to your skill set. You do. So the best thing and the best bit of advice for any young person is to see your skill set as a toolbox. And you've got this toolbox, and I love a toolbox, I love a drill, and I wouldn't even know what to do with it. But you get your toolbox out, and you pull which skills you need out for that particular game, or for that particular coach, or for that particular system. You pull what you need out of the toolbox, and you put them back in. You're going to have so many coaches who coach at the moment. Some you'll agree with, and some you won't. And you don't stand to a coach, you don't go, I don't agree with you. You just go, thank you very much, I appreciate your advice. You take it on board, you try and own it and find your own way of making it work for you. If it doesn't work, you bin it. But some coaches and some systems have a very set way of doing it. Right, we are going to defend from the inside out. But I was that player who would sometimes want to go on the outside because I saw something different on the pitch. And so it's that relationship with the coach to communicate, to go, look, I know you said to stand here, but can I try standing here sometimes and do, if I feel something's right, do you trust me enough to do it? And you'd hope at England level, players are empowered to go and make their own decisions. At the end of the day, it's the players who are on the pitch who are having to make the decisions and having to face and make decisions like that. With so many different environmental factors going on, you're having to really bring everything together with literally the speed of light. So you can't have a coach trying to, a coach has to be able to empower its players, and it's absolutely key. Empowerment, transparency and honesty. And that for me just helps the player grow, but also helps with selection and understanding where you stand.
Is it necessarily the case that if you are one of the 7 or 15 best players at that moment in time, you will start a match for England? Or can it be the case that even though you're great, someone even better is in your place? So people who overall might not be as strong as you, but plug a gap somewhere else, make it onto the pitch.
You've said it there in a nutshell without even realising. You've instantly done what the public do, which is the best player start. And actually that isn't what happens in a game. You'll have a starting squad and you'll have a finishing squad. It's not the bench anymore, because your finishing squad is as strong as your starting squad. But at the end of the day, you want players to start and then you want players to finish. But how cool is it that sometimes you have some of your best players finishing a game when the opposition's tired, and then you bring on your X factor and they're full of lightning and power and strength and grit, and the opposition can't face it. So not always do your best players start a final or a semi-final or a quarter-final. Sometimes your best players will sit and finish a game off, because that's what the squad needs, and that won't suit the opposition, therefore you'll be used to come on. So no, answer your question, not always the best players. Sometimes I've been part of World Cup teams, 5 World Cups, and 2 of those World Cups were with the best players alongside me, but not always the best players made the best squads.
Right, my last question. If I was still young, and therefore I could dream about my future and what I wanted to do, and I was thinking about setting my goals, what's your advice? Do I go, I want to be an Olympian, like you sometimes say, I want to win a World Cup? Or do I look for those marginal gains of, I want to be a bit faster, I want to go to this team,
you have to
I
do
want
both.
To do that thing?
You have to do both. So what I did, age 13, my stepdad made me write down and commit to it on a piece of paper. And he put it away. We were in Florida, he said, write down a piece of paper what you want to be. I wrote it down and he put it in the safe. And that was it, and I committed to it. And even though I had my eyes on the bigger prize.
What did you write?
England rugby player. And even though I had my eyes on the prize, at the end of the day, the little one percenters, the everydays, make up the bigger goal and the bigger purpose. So you have to have both. Goal setting isn't as simple as just saying, I'm going to be Olympian. You have to be Olympian so you're committed to the process. But then you have to understand the process to be able to become that Olympian. And they're the small goals. They're the everyday things. That's the resilience you have to show every time you step back, or every time when it rains outside, you don't want to go and do your running sessions and your shuttle sessions. When it's late at night and you're tired and you've got to prep your food and you've got to be up home the next day to go and have an exam. Like, you've got to be able to balance your life. They're the everyday commitments you commit to being that England player for the future. You never know what you're going to step out and be, but to give yourself the opportunity and to provide yourself with that platform to go and change the world is once in a lifetime.
Well, we are on our mission to change the world here too, Heather, and we will be adjusting our goal-setting mentality as a result of our chat. Do get in touch with us to help us change the world. Our email address is gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com, and on social media, we are @goodvibesonlytalent. And other than that, from me, for now, it's goodbye.